to Get Real KC with Jen and Eric. Kansas City's consumer-facing real estate podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Get Real KC, where we are overflowing with a passion for all things real estate. I'm Eric Jurgensen.
I'm Jen Justice.
And laughing at me right now, absolutely.
Queen herself. Cheers.
Right. We are so stinking excited to have you here. Folks, with us is Samantha Shepherd. Now, she is the managing partner and owner of Shepherd Elder Law. A topic, if you've been listening to, is, you know, dear to my own heart. But that's not all you do, right? I mean, there's a lot more. You also are the CEO of Assured Trust, a trust company.
And I've raised 4 children that can stand alone. Now, mind you, they're not independent yet.
but they can stand alone, right?
They're toilet trained. Don't tell them I said that.
Oh, my goodness. I hope they don't hear that.
They won't listen.
But then we'll need to take a minute to talk about one of your true passions, right? Your charity, right? Special Needs Assured.
Oh, I'd love to talk to you about that.
We might actually have to have you back
just from, you know, meeting you and talking to you for like 20 minutes. Yeah. There's so much to unpack.
Absolutely.
You guys are in for a treat.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can't wait. And at some point, we'll have to cut me off. Say, Eric, you have to stop the podcast because I'm sure I could talk forever.
I'll turn the bill on and then we'll end it.
Typical attorney, I had to say that. Billable hours. All right. Let's start with what I'm sure everybody already is wondering, which is your English accent.
Well, I haven't said very much, so perhaps they haven't noticed it. I do have these children who keep me very focused and on my potential vanity. I once was interviewed and they said, oh my God, you sound so incredibly English. That's not how you really sound. I think what happens is if I get a bit nervous, I do sound a bit more English. I'm not nervous today, so you guys make me comfortable. God knows what the people are going to learn.
I can't wait. We're digging into the elder law.
That's absolutely fantastic. Yes, when you were doing the heavy English accent, it sounded very posh to me. So.
Oh, no, I'm not a posh person, though, but thank you.
All right. So.
Posh means hoity-toity in my mind.
Right, yeah. So.
Hoity-toity.
I've been to England, primarily London, but then I watch a lot of Graham Norton, so I...
I don't know what that is because I don't watch TV, but I can totally imagine.
It's a long-running English talk show.
Okay.
So.
We're not going to comment. I think most people have seen Downton Abbey. That seems to be.
Downton Abbey.
I literally don't watch any.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
All right. But we are already derailed. Let's start talking about some elder law, and particularly as it revolves around real estate. So let's approach it sort of from the front side first, which is... if we are aging in a home and we're not really anticipating moving or anything like that, and we're concerned about legacy, right? We're concerned about inheritance. We're concerned about the disposition of a home if it's not going to be inherited after we're gone, to make it easier on our heirs, our children, whoever it might be. There are, and I'm sure it will vary a little bit or maybe a lot situation by situation, but there are things that we, the general uneducated populace, continue to hear about that we don't really understand. So, there's fancy words like probate that everybody seems to hate. There's taxation and tax basis. There's trusts. There's all of these things. Can you paint us a little bit of picture, right?
Since you talked about two of the things people really know are coming, death and taxes, in one breath.
We have to be succinct. We only got 30 to 40 minutes. So.
Okay. I think we all need to address the fact that we will pass. And whether we leave the clothes on our body or millions of dollars in the bank, we need to do a little bit of planning. And that may be as simple as picking whether it's cremation or burial, or it may be as sophisticated as setting up multiple trusts to avoid taxation. Just no one really wants to do it. And the first thing that makes us address it is often a crisis. It might just be your friend has passed. It might be one of your children, unfortunately, has passed. Most of us address it first, head on, with our own parents. Yeah? You're nodding and you...
Oh, yeah. Luckily, I have a great real estate attorney, and that's mainly what my forte has been in. And so we have all of our real estate set up in different ways with recorded deeds and such that it passes seamlessly. I mean, we spent hours upon hours in the attorney's office doing that. Now, not to say that I have everything set up perfectly, because I know I don't. There's a gentleman in North Kansas City that does a lot for the police down there that's helped us. But let me just tell you that I have since acquired more things. And so there definitely is more planning and more stuff that needs to be done.
So you asked me for a word, and I would say planning. So that's where the estate planning term comes in. It sounds to me off-putting to most normal people when you say the word estate, and probably as off-putting as a British accent can be. You think that sometimes the word estate means only for the rich, and it is not that way at all.
Well, first of all, everybody loves English accents.
I know. I was like, what's off-putting? Who is this?
Really?
Oh, who are those weird people?
Well, thank you. I feel welcome already.
Are you kidding?
Sexy, just, right? Just, like, oh,
goodness.
Love the
I better sit up straight.
I got to tell you, because you have the, because, you know, you have your background and your accent, this will be the first podcast my wife will listen to. So.
Yeah, I'm flattered.
I didn't know Lisa was.
And what is her name?
Us,
Lisa? Hello, yeah. Lisa. I am very pleased to meet you.
So, when, and I think that's a good, like, because I, initially, when I would think of estate, I would think of wealthy people with, you know, houses or a mansion or whatever. And, you know, I'm not particularly well to do. And the recording studio is in the basement of my home. So you have seen, you know, what my home is worth, or, you know, type of home I have. But it's my estate, right? I mean, it's not just because I'm not a person who has a multi-million dollar home or anything. It's still my estate. And there's still assets that are part of it that need to be taken care of.
Can I use you as an example?
Absolutely.
May I use you as an example? You won't be offended, right?
I will not.
Okay, well, I presume that you have a checking account.
I do.
Maybe even a savings account.
I do.
And a retirement account.
I have all of them.
And a car.
I have a couple.
How about a watch?
No, I'm not a watch.
Pair of sunglasses that cost more than the average?
A bowling
because they're prescription.
Prescription, yeah.
Okay, and
I have computers. I'm a computer guy.
Oh, that's right.
He's a gaming guy. Yeah.
And all of these microphones and things, they
I
cost
have the
money.
Studio. It's worth a chunk.
Those are mine. No, just like
they are not.
We have to address death, dying, and disability with a little bit of dignity. Oh, my God, that was not even intentional. All those D's just flew out of my mouth on two sips of caffeine.
It's in a very alliterative sentence.
It is. So what will happen to you? You'll have a stroke at the very moment that we finish this program. Then you will immediately need us to have the basic documents. So healthcare power of attorney, financial power of attorney, HIPAA, and a living will or advance directive. Those four documents, which I will gladly go more slowly and give you them one by one, those documents help in this chapter of your incapacity during your stroke. The minute your body hits the ground on its way to the 6 feet under, those four documents mean nothing. So a power of attorney ends at your death. And then what happens? We have to take care of your checking account, your house, your car, your personal effects, glasses, equipment, and we have to figure out their value to decide if we have taxes to pay, which I shall tell you that you don't. And I'm not trying to be offensive, because you mentioned wife, and the estate tax is $13 million a pop for the limit. So unless I missed the butler at the front door.
No.
It's highly unlikely that we'll have an estate tax.
Well, she was just in the other room. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That was the cat. That was the cat was the butler.
You should have called a butler. That would have been it.
That would have been fantastic.
Well, we didn't know. You didn't warn us.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's as I am examining, when I feel like I'm moderately educated on some of this stuff because of some of my clients I've dealt with, and because of my own personal situation with an elderly mother that we care for and have gone through some of this with. And in that two sentences, I'm like, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't want you to feel that way.
First of all, it's good. I love the knowledge.
It should be easy. It should be accessible. And it's not for most people. However, death is accessible to all of us. So what happens is there are hospitals and rehab places full of our loved ones, and we don't have the right documents in order to step in and help them. Then we get to know a lawyer. in a context that we don't want to know them. We need the court to get involved in order to get at mom's house. Let's say that your mother fell and this were her house. Then we would need to place her in an appropriate setting for her rehab. And if that rehab failed her and she ended up needing long-term care in a nursing home, which is the end that we don't want. Nobody wants that.
Right.
But let's go to that extreme.
Sure.
Happens. We need money. And how do we get money? We have a house. We need to sell it. How do you have the authority to sell that house? That authority to sell the house comes from your mother herself, who's listed on the title, or it comes from a power of attorney document that says, I pick Eric to be my agent. That agency dies with your mother. If she dies when she's at this nursing home, we haven't taken care of the house. Now we get to know that ugly word, probate.
Right.
Because that's the judge. We can't sell that house anymore. We're stuck. Unless we had a deed already recorded that said it would go to this particular person if I still owned it on death. Now, that's always risky because let's say she picks you. You might be, I'm on the D train here. You might be a deadbeat. You might go through a divorce. You might have a disability. It's not ideal to name one individual because what if you're in the same car with your mom and it hits a pole?
Right.
So best would be a trust. And a trust is just quite accessible to your ordinary, run-of-the-mill, middle-class American. It's not something for the uber affluent. It's for all of us.
That's an excellent point to make to probably the majority of our listeners, that is accessible to you. So yeah. That's a very, very
and,
excellent point.
And at some point, I want to kind of get into, very basic ballpark ideas of price tags. But I want to jump back to something and that you had mentioned, those four documents that everyone should have. And I've been hearing more and more. Those exist for my mother, but they don't exist right now for my wife and I, for each other.
Ooh, pain. And, I'm in pain. I'm starting to sweat.
Right. And so I've been hearing more and more that when you get married, you should be executing all of these documents because you never know when the car accident's going to come or cancer or whatever.
You're sounding very official when you say executing. There is no executioner around the corner. By the way, I'm in some random man's basement, by the way, if I'm never seen or heard from again.
Lots of people have left this basement, okay. Samantha. And I do want to, Sarah is at the back. You can't see her at the cameras, but I want to give a shout out to her because something that she said the other day, we're big advocates of the chamber here, and that's how we know about Shepherd Elder Law and all the wonderful things. But she said, if you have an 18-year-old that has just turned 18, you want to get a power of attorney done for them because what if something happens to them while they're away at college? Heck, what if they're in a car wreck in your own town? It really doesn't matter, quite frankly. And so I think that, again, death is something people don't like to talk about. And hopefully, even in a car wreck, most of us will probably survive that. But there is a possibility that we would be incapacitated at some level during that time. And so that power of attorney is going to help whoever is in charge to make decisions, to be in control, whatever that looks like. That 18-year-old could have a car. They could have all of these things that you just described. And so we would need this power of attorney. And I would venture to say that 99% of 18-year-olds do not have a power of attorney. You guys might know the actual stats, but I'm just going out on a limb here. And I'm going to say that is not a priority when you turn 18 years old.
Well, it's also for the parents. They think, it's a cost. So I'll give you an example. There's a young woman that I met this week, absolutely delightful woman. I felt very blessed to have the opportunity to meet with her. She was in a terrible car accident 2 years ago. She was thrown in the talking. Wow, tease again. So she was thrown from the car and was pronounced dead at the scene and has managed to pull herself up with an amazing supportive family. They did not have a power of attorney. So they then had to get court involvement. So that court involvement is called guardianship and conservatorship. Guardianship is the decision making over your body and your healthcare decisions and pretty much everything except for your money. Money is the conservatorship. But that required court. So there's your first introduction to why it's
And court is
expensive.
Slow.
It costs more.
Yep. How long does that take on average? Because you would know, and I just know from the real estate side, court moves very slow. I would hope that in a dire straight situation like that, it would move a little faster. But tell us just how long that might take.
That's going to be a temporary emergency guardianship and conservatorship that could be handled.
Could it get granted in 24, 48, 72 48
hours?
So
it
days.
It could be. And it's you're running around trying to find a lawyer in an area that you don't understand, trying to get a doctor's letter or a doctor to be part of that.
That might take even longer.
That is actually probably the hiccup is getting the right medical information. But if you have somebody who's in a coma or in a catastrophic situation, that's not as challenging. But the courts don't generally move fast. So guardianships and conservatorships for, say, a typical, let's say, a mother with dementia. Mm-hmm. You didn't get the power of attorney in time. She's now making no sound financial decisions and will not agree to let you help her out. So then we have to go through the judicial process. We get the guardianship and conservatorship. You're talking 6 weeks, if you're lucky, might be eight.
Maybe broke in 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah, she's got a new friend. A new friend is taking her through the drive-thru with the ATM. Come on, one more time, Grandma.
They went to Marody's. Their new friend. They went to Marody's.
I don't know what that one is. Am I supposed
to know? You don't
know
what Marody's is? Oh, this is for another day. We'll tell you what Marody's is.
I think we've established that it's pretty important. We've talked in a handful of these scenarios about medical power of attorney and guardianship and conservatives. Can't even say it.
That's all right. I'll help you out there. Conservatorship.
Conservatorship. That's the
Well, maybe
the
I should say it with my twang. Conservatorship.
You got it. Wow, that's
I'm
I believe
sorry.
You believe in
I told you
the
I would
Boot
behave.
Hill of Missouri. That's fantastic.
Such a character.
Now I'm tongue-tied. What's the right way for someone to say, okay, look, I want to be prepared and I want to get this on my plate, figure it out, and then I want to be in a position where I don't have to rethink about it all the time because lot of people don't want to think about, end of life all the time.
6 feet under.
Oh my gosh, I can't control this woman next to me. So I would say that the process is a little bit, she's not controllable. The process is a little bit structured, and it is that with my office, Shepherd Elder Law, there's my plug, that we handle normal humans, 18 until grave. So a lot of times now it's just Shepherd Law. You call, you get a questionnaire. It's a lengthy questionnaire. It starts out with name, address, date of birth. Are you married? Where'd you meet him? Have you been in the military? Are you currently at home? Or are you in an assisted living? What are your assets? Bank account, savings account, car, 401k? Do you have life insurance? Do you have a house? What's the equity in the house? It's really in your business. Do you have a will already? Do you have a power of attorney already? If you have it, bring it. Do you have a financial advisor, a tax preparer, a physician? So we dig in. But the financial picture is the same for me, whether you have one bank account or multiple. I need to know where it is and, ballpark what's in it so we can help you figure out a direction. So then you come down into physically, in the COVID days, we do it over Zoom. Kind of fun. I still do those, but I like humans. I like to squeeze them. So they then sit down with me and you go
can't control
through,
me.
They can't control.
She's gonna squeeze you.
Confidential. It's a confidential meeting, meaning anyone who's not your spouse is going to be asked to leave at some point in that meeting. And then we go through, if you have a problem today with articulating your desires, either you're fully sedated or you are temporarily out of it because you have a surgical procedure, who speaks for you? And is that same person who speaks for you on healthcare the right person to step up with your checkbook? Maybe not. Maybe you've got this wonderful sister who has great empathy, but that woman always lets her car go unregistered. You don't want her in charge of your finances, but you know she's going to show up at your bedside with the butterscotch and some chocolates and she's all good.
But then afterwards, she's going to the casino. So,
Your money. Yeah, exactly. With your money and a new boyfriend.
Car. No Tim Tacs in your boyfriend's cup cracking down on that. It's a real deal.
That's right. Yeah, oh, no, God. I mean, I get that. I mean, and certainly somebody who, in our family, in our extended family, we, you know, people that are really, really good and certainly would be the smart choice to be involved, be the medical advocate, make those decisions, they are not the people that should have the checkbook.
So how about the value of...
I don't like, personally, the money to go with the child. Either.
Oh God,
like,
no, please don't do that.
Yes, yeah,
half of the value of a lawyer
me.
Is sitting down and having someone who is unbiased, professional, and distanced from your circumstances to help you evaluate your options and explain to you why it's not a good idea to name your three children equally on your trust as co-trustees, hoping that they will magically now get along.
Right.
Even That's though such a great point. Man, that just I don't know if you can probably call a scenario where everybody's gotten along, but I bet you they get few and far in between. Death changes people.
It's a burden as well to try to get three humans at one bank to sign one document at one time. Oh, wait, that's assuming that mother has one banking institution and one account.
Right.
So as a practical matter, that's the sort of thing that we help families walk through what is likely to happen. And you brought up, do you want to address it all the time? On average, 3 years. I can meet with a family and then tell them, I need to see you in a year. I had a lady this week that I said, I'd like to see you in a year. She's 74 and had a significant portion of her face removed due to a cancer. And there are other cancers in her body. She doesn't have children. So she's asked my other company that we talked about, Assured Trust Company, to step in as her person. She doesn't have anyone. So no one to make healthcare decisions, no one to walk through if she needs to sell the house. And so somebody has to have that power of attorney. And in her case, this is a good thing about houses, you can put that house not in the name of the two people, but in the name of the trust that allows us then to, while she's still alive, right, sell that house for the money that we need to pay for her care.
And we see that a fair amount, right? We see houses in trusts. A typical scenario would be a person or a couple or whomever would buy the house and then they would move it into their trust because the trust can't get a mortgage. But when it's being purchased essentially for cash, like a deal I'm working right now, the trust is purchasing the house.
And most mortgage companies, actually, I won't even say most, they all understand. So without exception, there's federal law that backs this as well. You don't have to pay for your house in cash in order for it to be in the name of the trust. So my house says Samantha Shepherd Trust as the owner, if you look it up. And I have a mortgage. We won't talk about what my rate is since I bought that house after rates went a little hairy.
Oh. Yeah, but
you can refinance.
But yeah,
moving
a property into a trust is extremely easy. That I do know because it's something you know I deal with. So it's not the whole picture, right? And I think that's like in my own personal life. I think that's what I've done is there's a thing here and a thing there. Maybe my financial advisor helped me with something. I've never sat down with somebody and said, what does the picture look like that I need to be doing?
It's a bit like stripping naked. And so that is what I do. Not that I strip people naked.
I was going to say, hold it just a minute.
Wait, not what you said when he came in.
I know. I'm
the
so
name
sorry.
Of the business
I'm like,
again?
Your office experience must be interesting.
Yes, it is. We have curtains. It's okay.
You have curtains?
Curtains, yeah.
Well, but it's not unlike what we tell our clients when they're applying for a mortgage, and maybe not as full-fledged because it's typically financial, but we tell them, you know, get ready for a really solid financial inspection where you're going to have to provide all kinds of information. Now, if you're going above and beyond that, preparing for medical power of attorneys and all of those kinds of things, that's a bigger brush, but it's the same concept, which is if you really want a professional to help you protect your assets and be in a good position should bad things happen, they have to know the circumstance to protect.
Okay, I have to interrupt you because you said protect your assets, which most of the time what we've been talking about through this last 20 minutes or so has been about planning, getting everything organized for the people who take over for you when you're either unable to communicate or you're gone, you've passed away. But there's also this chunk of time now, 75% of us will live in some out-of-the-home care setting. Shocking, but that's the number now. So planning for the financial impact of that means that a lot of people are trying to protect the house. You can protect the house. What you don't want to do, please don't give your house away. When you give your house away to one of your children outright, you're incurring so much risk, but you're also incurring a tax bill down the road. So it's tempting. I have one child. Let me just sign a deed to pass this house over to my child, because I've heard that I might end up needing a nursing home, and I've got to do it. There is a 5-year look back. This has not changed. We took this on at the federal level. We took it on here in Missouri. We're doing it in our neighboring states, Kansas as well. It's a 5-year look back, which means somebody might get a bit of information and go hog wild. If they have 5 years before they think they'll enter the nursing home, they'll say to you, I'm going to just go and make a deed that says this house is no longer mine. I'm going to put it in Eric's name. Please don't do that. Do you want to dig into that a bit?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of aware of that. Let's go a little bit, but let's not teach them tax law.
Yeah, but I think that that's a good point in what you said, because it is an easy, like, oh, I could go just quick claim this and then I won't have it and then they can't see that. But that's not at all the case.
So. There are lots of reasons not to do that, but you can do that with what's called an asset protection trust. Not an everyday ordinary trust, but it's a trust that is locked. That's my own word. The legal word is irrevocable. So an irrevocable trust works to protect assets if it's been in play for 5 years.
And when I said protect assets, I was thinking of things put myself in a position to not pass a huge tax burden on to my children, which is redoing the tax basis, which you want to do through inheritance and not a quit claim deed.
Correct.
It was also things like avoiding probate, which can be expensive and costly, and not.
It is a court process.
Apparently, that's. I just said the two things.
Same you did thing, it again. Death and taxes.
I was going to say expensive, and it also could end up where your assets are getting divided in a way that you didn't want. That's what I kind of meant by
sort of
protecting the passing of assets.
But that was an excellent point, especially because. Obviously, people do it, and that's why you say, do not do this. So.
Well, there are things that happen to the children as well. You pass your house to your child, and then children sometimes die before parents. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Happens, it does.
Or divorce happens with such frequency, too. So now you've put an asset into the pot of your child and his spouse.
Yeah, because Missouri is a marital property state, friends.
That's right, 50-50.
Mm-hmm. Irrevocable trust definitely hones that in a lot more.
So there's a lot of moving parts. With a little bit of the time we have left, let's if we haven't convinced you that A, you need to be doing this and not putting it off, and that B, that it's there's a gamut of things that need to be covered, not just one little issue, then you need to go back and listen to the first half of the podcast. But let's switch to a situation now where mom and dad or whomever it is have gotten past, either they've passed on, which happens a lot,
She's telling us it's guaranteed that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mom and dad have passed along, or maybe they've gone into a nursing home, maybe they've lost their mental faculties, and none of this is in place.
Right.
All right. So what now son or daughter is I've got to deal with this house. I've got to deal with any
cars,
advice.
The
car, the watches, the expensive sunglasses.
I did give you a bit of a stressful moment there about all those things. So it's you're saying that your mother upstairs has passed away hypothetically and she's your situation to take care of. So you're trying to work. Look after your family, and you have a crisis that you haven't addressed before because you get one mother, and she will haunt you if you don't take care of
these
things. By
the way, just so you know, I have been through this with my father, and
they were divorced.
I was
going to say, you haven't been through it with your mother because I can hear upstairs.
Yeah, they were divorced, and not only did we dismantle all the things and the expensive sunglasses, but we also had to dismantle his business.
Aye.
So, yeah. Any advice, any tips if you are finding yourself in that position?
I would say, regrettably, you do need legal assistance. So you want to make sure that and find out whether you have a good rapport with your attorney. They're not all made equal. there are some that are absolutely delightful, despite all of the television shows to the contrary. when you're taking over as a, let's say, trustee, that's a bit of a dirty word because it's an unknown word, right? Trustee is the person who's in charge of the trust. Executor is the person or personal representative. They're in the same, they mean the same thing. They're in charge of a will. No will has any effect. None. Zero. No effect. Unless it goes in front of a judge. So the will walks its little self into the courthouse and we open a probate. I do a will for every one of my clients, even with a trust, because I don't know what you're going to forget or that you may later acquire.
Acquire, and it's not
counted yep, for. Yep, you didn't trust. Think of it. You've got a gift from somebody. You have a 401k that rolled over into an IRA and it named somebody in the XY. You can't even imagine the scenarios of I've forgotten. It tends to be digging through the box of stuff we find a bond and it, or a life insurance and there's no beneficiary named. So that stuff that we don't know what we're going to do with, we use the will for. When we have a trust, a lawyer will say, like me, I'll say you need a pour over will. That's P. O-U-R, pour, as in liquid pours. The will pours into this trust. So your little will, if you've been a good client of Samantha's, we won't use it because everything will already be in the trust. Then the person, think of the trust as a bucket. So the bucket has a handle and the person holding the handle in life should be you guys, which means you're the trustee. So if you're walking around, you and your wife, you're both holding the handle together. In today's world, most of the time, we need a single trust. It's the family's trust. So you can be co-trustees together. And as married people, that's just the norm. And it'll say in the trust that Eric, when you said Lisa, mm-hmm. Eric or Lisa can act alone. So if she, Lisa, ends up having some sort of debilitating mental cognitive impairment as you age, you can still sell that house. Because it's already in the name of the trust. You don't need a power of attorney. You don't need the court. We've moved the house into the trust, into that bucket. You're holding it alone. You can sell the house without her. That's one of the perks. So I didn't exactly answer your question, but I'm thinking about if you had come to me before and your mother were my client, I would have itemized everything she had in terms of assets with names like the bank account, the checking account, the CD, the bonds, the car, the caravan, the house. Those would have been named into the trust, where they would have been retitled in the name of the trust or directed by beneficiary designation into the trust. And all that would be outside would be jewelry, personal effects, which she can, I would give her a list, an open piece of paper that she can sign and date at any future time. And that will say, Mum gives the sunglasses to the neighbor. Mum gives her favorite lawyer, Watch Samantha, a big, fat, sparkling ring. And never do clients give me things. I would be disbarred. That was a funny. Yeah, yeah. That was an aside.
But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who have very particular familial items they want to give to particular people.
Yeah, it happens most often, it seems like, with art, with jewelry, with guns. It's not your T-shirts, even though it's a fantastic-looking one. They're not going to care about that T-shirt. Right. Or clothing. Often household furniture is nothing but a burden unless there's a particular antique. But if your mom has done all this, it is still work to help get that sorted, because you have to read a document and then figure out what are the tax implications for her in her last year? What are the tax implications of the trust? What are the assets? Do we have to pay income tax on them? Like an IRA. Nobody's paid the tax on the IRA unless it's Roth. So you've got to figure out to whom those assets are going, at what pace they must be distributed. So it's work and it's okay to get help.
And if mom hasn't been a client and we haven't done all of that work and she kicks the bucket and there's nothing in place,
then that's okay.
Then it gets harder, right?
It gets much harder. That's called probate. I actually, at this point in my career, I don't handle probate at all at Shepherd. We will refer to some trusted colleagues, so feel free to call and I will direct you. to see whether you actually need probate or not. There are asset thresholds about whether you... Missouri's kind of a pickle. Even tiny bitty bits of money have to go through the court to get somewhere. And it's worth noticing the difference between... Because not every state is that way. There are some states that let you work through small things with just an affidavit, something you can get offline. Missouri, not so much. You've got to go through a very clogged...
We like to pay the lawyers.
Yeah.
Well, and so I do want to talk about special needs assured, but before we do that, just real quick, average guy like me, average home, average amount of assets.
You know, average is a relative term, Eric. Right, you're going to make me
let's,
inquire.
Let's go middle class, leaning towards upper middle class. Maybe they've got a good, you know, half a million, $1 million retirement, nothing special, not a ton. Maybe there's between home assets and car assets, maybe another... $500,000, that kind of thing. So, you know, they're, you know, somebody who's maybe not living paycheck to paycheck, but not wildly beyond that. They have an emergency fund. You know, just hopefully with, as we get older, where we've at least positioned ourselves if we're not, you know, bringing in
fair.
Huge amounts
I understand.
Of wealth.
So you want
the
to know
kind of people who are scared to call a lawyer.
Right.
Because
right.
they're too expensive. Even though they've never called a lawyer and found out what it costs. So let's give them an idea. So let's just take my wife and I need to come in and I need to do some of these things. So if we were to say, hey, I'm going to be your client, we're going to go through the stripping and we're
going to... These people don't know me. They're going to think that I actually am not... I'm a very serious woman when it comes to your actual financial situation. So here you told me that your audience was not just our local area, but I can give you intimate... No, intimate. I can give you specific details on... A range of prices in the Metro Kansas City area.
And that's what we do in real estate as well. So that's fine.
Okay. And I will tell you that my contacts around the country tell me that these things, there's a range still of normal. But we live in a very inexpensive part.
Right. And the same country. In real estate. So we have these, our listeners are used to, this
Midwestern
is what's going
rates.
On in the Kansas
Missouri,
City market. Yeah.
Missouri and Kansas.
Yeah. Okay. So if you were to open up a book, you can actually find the statutory rates in Missouri for what it costs to go through probate. And it can be a bit of a shocker. So it's lawyers are paid handsomely if you don't prepare. So there's that. What would it cost a range? You're going to take into consideration that some people's idea of not a lot may be just a house. You've talked about people that I think are above what I call middle class. So I think having $500,000 worth of retirement assets and $500,000 of other assets is well above the median, keeping in mind my exposure to
to
both Missouri and Kansas.
That makes me feel good.
Well, there you go. You
think
might
those
be
are
robbed
my numbers,
later
but
today.
I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I think those numbers are high. So people with less than that still need a trust more often than not.
Oh, well, yeah, I think we've established that pretty much anyone walking around that has, you know,
I would
a
say
pot to piss in. No, just, that's a little.
Well,
but seriously,
I might be able to make this easier for you because we haven't had this discussion off mic. So I can tell you what I would expect it to cost and you can tell me how like unrealistic I am.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
You're talking all in, right?
Yeah, okay. All pretty much. You
including
know, all
your
the,
deeds.
Right.
And a couple of wills, powers of attorney, health care right. directives, a trust.
I would assume that I am going to be out a minimum of $4,000 or $5,000.
That's pretty, I'd say that's average, but perhaps high for what we do.
Okay.
I think you get an advantage with, I would say if you pay more than six, your estate is sophisticated, meaning that you have property in multiple jurisdictions. You might have something taxable going on, or you have a special needs child. Your average might be significantly, you might be in that 3 to 5 range, I
three
think.
Three to
is,
five?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Yeah.
I mean, my expectations were good, but I have a feeling that other people...
I'm not allowed to say those things, you know, so it's not my actual fees. I got to sort of couch myself. Into,
right. Well, what someone should expect to pay. I mean, we ask people all the time to talk about their industry in general. I mean, we want people to be educated. Obviously, they've gotten to listen to you and there would be no reason not to give you a call.
Well, thank you.
But they may, you know, already have a trusted lawyer or something along those lines.
So I'll tell you what costs more. I told you the probate work costs more. I would say the planning for a crisis, when there is a dementia diagnosis and you're looking at nursing home admittance, those are significantly expensive times for a family. They're facing, our area can cost $10,000 to $13,000 now for a nursing home for a month. So the planning that is involved with that is a pricey proposition. And that really does depend on what that individual family has. What we talked about before, an irrevocable trust, those are generally more expensive than a regular family trust. And you don't need to do those when you're 40 or 50 or 60. It's when you're probably not working any longer and you've had the time to sit down with a financial advisor to map out what you want to do with your money. Some people want to give their money foolishly to their children. I tell my children all the time, I'm going to die broke. I want them to have no expectation that they'll be anything, so they live.
You can be like Bill Gates and only give his children $10 million apiece.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, I have a headache just thinking about that.
Let's shift for a minute and let's talk about special needs assurance.
Can we?
Yeah, absolutely. So tell everybody what that is.
Yeah, so about, let me start by, you have to know assured trust. So assured trust is a commercials, well, we call it a corporate trust company, meaning that when you have all of these assets in a trust, the logical people to take care of it are you and your spouse. But then who? And putting that burden on a child is really that. You're putting that burden on a child. And sometimes their children are, they live very far away, or they're in the throes of looking after their own children, or it causes friction amongst the siblings. So often you need a corporate trustee, and that would be this organization that I started called Assured Trust. And I started that about 3.5 years ago. The reason was primarily because we didn't have a local option that was all about special needs individuals, or we don't want to call people orphan seniors, but those seniors who really didn't have someone to step up. And it's not pretty work. When we're aging, it's not the desirable work. So unless you have a couple of million dollars, it's challenging to find a corporate trustee. So that was why I started, pardon me here, the Assured Trust. But when I did that, what I found was that well-intentioned parents would set up a fund for their kids to the best of their ability. And it might be all they can do to put away $50,000, or they might have a term policy with insurance that was $50,000, and it's a heck of a lot better than nothing. I'm all in favor of setting up a special needs trust with absolutely whatever dime you can squeeze. I think that's a penny that you can anyway, missed analogy there, metaphor, goobered up. But what if it runs out? And it does run out. So then you've got these adorable 60, 70-year-old children, quote unquote, with special needs, and no money left in that pot. And I was meeting them. So envision me sitting there at a nursing home with a lady in her 90s, and there is her 70-year-old disabled child. And they've made no plans. So, and there's no money. Well, when I say no money, there might be the house, which can't be lived in anymore, because the special needs individuals live with mum all her life. So we have to eventually put this poor little 70-year-old into, we try everything, right? Community living, and then you realize ultimately it's nursing level care. And there are ways that we can create special needs trust for this individual. But it's not a lot of money. So nobody really just gets all excited about managing that money at the corporate level. And the money dwindles, and there's $10,000 left, and no one will do it. So it becomes this charitable proposition. Special Needs Assured is this charity that is supposed to do three things. Help in those cases where those little trust funds have run out, and so we see a need. We've identified a person, but we don't have any money left to help out. To create community amongst special needs families, and start young if we can. And then just generally education. And it's always, when I say generally education, it's always best to start out with youngsters. I hit up a family yesterday with education, and their kid's still fifth grade. So their special needs child is nonverbal autistic. They don't have a lot of money. A lawyer to them is a scary proposition. So I'm talking as fast as I can, saying, you are okay. You have an IEP. You don't need to do this guardianship, conservatorship. Until they hit 18, we need to be in court as close to the 18th birthday. Okay? No problem. Do you have a dime that you might leave to this child. If you die prematurely, they're going to need a special needs trust. We can cross that bridge when we get there. But right now, your biggest focus is providing the best loving home environment, knowing that guardianship and conservatorship is, you know, let's say fifth grade all the way to 18. It's a good bit down the road. And then also teaching them about an ABLE account, which is a savings account vehicle that is available for families who may never need or be able to afford a special needs trust, but they can open one with $25. So there's nobody else out there saying, woohoo, let me teach you about how to set up an ABLE account. This law passed in 2014. So that's my little charity. I give my money to Parkinson's. I give my money to Alzheimer's. I give my money to women's shelters and Down syndrome innovations. But I also really want to make a dent into this arena of education around special needs.
That's just amazing.
Well, and
thank you.
Just, what a heart.
Anybody who listens to Jen and I now knows why we still feel so vindicated that Samantha is on the podcast. Because, of course, that's what this podcast is about. It's about providing education that people should be able to get. They shouldn't have to go running for it. They shouldn't have to pay for it. For us, it's, you know, it's about wealth and financial transactions and about home and about their what is typically their largest financial investment. And they get nobody telling them what they need to be doing.
Yeah, one of our big things was taking the mystery out of it, right? And you've done an excellent job of that today.
Thank you.
Said these are not scary words. These are not scary people. This is not just for the rich, right? So I think we've done a good job of that. But in reality, you know, this is information that it may be readily available on the internet, but you really got to know where to go look. There is so much out there today. And if you Google the word real estate, if you Google the word elder law, whatever you Google, there's going to be a lot of stuff that gets thrown at you. And what I think we're really trying to do a good job is we're trying to direct you to those resources that we know are valid, trusted resources that aren't just people trying to scam you online. You know, so it's a big part of taking the mystery out of it. And that's, you know, where our heart's at.
All right. Well, we're running to the end.
We knew we could talk to you forever.
Yeah. We've got to stop. So we've got.
I love it. Can I come back?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
you're going to have to come back, right? Some strange man's basement.
She's making it out, everyone.
Let's talk. We like to end every episode with kind of something kind of fun and lighthearted. And so this is about
a crazy
situation. So give us, I'm sure you have 1,000 stories, but give us a good story that might be kind of a crazy situation around elder law and real estate.
What's the craziest thing you can tell us and still be within some sort of
compliance? Yeah, still keep
right.
Your,
oh
the
my
confidentiality
goodness, the
you're
confidentiality
supposed
thing.
To.
Mm.
No names.
Well, it's not my story, but I know this amazing woman that I've loved for a long time named Doris, and she's crazy, crazy full of love and care for other people. And she's that kind of woman that you would call and she would run to your house and do whatever you needed to do. She's now in her 80s. She lives in a retirement community in Florida. And she told me the story about going to the house and helping a family out. Now, emptying out a house, the family.
Right.
And she sticks her head under the bed and sees this big head full of hair, and she screams, you know, and then it's a wig. I'm sorry, but it's just a wig. And so you can see, if you understood Doris, she's this tiny little woman with a little shortcut white hair just screeching at this head full of like a Medusa hair thing. I'm like, yeah, you never know what you're going to find under somebody's bed. Be careful what you leave under your bed.
Oh, yeah.
Well, are you kidding? I'm putting a wig underneath
there. You're doing that now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we just put my picture after I got the face lasered off.
We could do that.
You tell your audience about everything, do you?
Oh, I'm pretty open book.
Okay.
All right. So hopefully, as you've been listening, you've been convinced not only that this is something that you should be doing, but you've been motivated to go, okay, let me go find out what this really takes. And if they're anything like me, you're going to be their next call. So how do they get a hold of you guys?
Well, first, we do occasional do free, we call them lunch and learns, where we do have community education. So my phone number is 913-333-3533, area code 913-333-3533. 3533. Also online, Shepherd, Elder Law. Shepherd is spelt like someone who looks after sheep, which is appropriate. S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D. Elder, as in a senior person, law.com. And we can, if we cannot direct you ourselves to a free resource, we hopefully you will find something on our website.
Yeah, absolutely an important thing to do, and so motivate me to do the parts that I haven't gotten done.
I think he's going to ask me a few questions when this podcast ends. Will be running.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, if we get to billable time, I'll wait and do it all as a package. But I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on. I think it's incredibly important for everyone, our listeners, you know, in real estate and out. So we just really appreciate you being here.
We'll get this out to more people, more education, more places.
Okay, everybody. That's another great episode of Get Real KC. Until next time.
You have been listening to Get Real KC with Eric Jurgensen and Jen Justice. For more information or to contact our hosts, visit us at dreamhomesbyjen.com, where you can find more episodes exploring real estate as it matters to you.